Welcome back to Mario's Sunday Roast. Now, many of you out there may have heard of the restaurant L'Écrivain. I certainly have, and I've been there a few times, although I can't afford to have been there many times. But the man behind L'Écrivain is sitting right opposite me in studio, and it's Derry Clark. Hi, Derry.
Hello, Mario. How are you?
Hello, Mario. Welcome to Mario's Sunday Roast. Listen, Easter Sunday, you can't tell me that your Easter spread today isn't going to be sumptuous. Tell me it's not
well,
a boiled
egg.
Well,
I say every oven over the country as I speak has a lamb or a leg of a lamb or something in it, yeah?
And is that what you'll be doing?
Well, yes. Well, actually, funny enough, today I'm going to do a barbecue. Family barbecue, would you believe? Yeah, I will be lamb on it. Yes, there will. But there will be vegetarian options because our daughter, Sarah May, is a vegetarian.
All right.
And has been for most of her life, which is a great thing, actually, you know. I kind of get it. Don't get vegans too much, but I do get vegetarianism.
Yeah.
And for her, I'll have to kind of, because you have to think about it, you know, and... she loves like veggies, obviously. Yeah. Done in different ways. So I like maybe get a head of cauliflower, brush a little bit of butter on it, and put it on the barbecue. Really? Lid on.
Yeah.
A real barbecue now. I'm talking about no gas. This is like wood.
Charcoal or wood.
Correct.
Yeah.
The gas doesn't give that flavour. And she'd have that. Just, even that alone, she'd be happy.
Yeah. Just speaking about the veganism, has that changed your menu in any way in L'Écrivain? Have you had to have you had to address that whole thing?
Well, I'm over 40 years cooking. In the business, and only the last 10 years the whole thing has come about, like allergies and vegetarianism and veganism. It's amazing really how
it's
happened. It is really.
Suddenly everybody has an allergy.
They have really, you know. I mean, I started off as once a year maybe. I mean, you know, it really was, and it's kind of frustrating at the moment because when you have a lot of tables in with allergies, so-called allergies, I gotta say, it does slow the service down. And it makes the kitchen, the flow of the kitchen fall down. I mean, you know, you're in the flow when you're busy. So you got to stop, check the table, check what's going into the dish, make sure it's okay. It has to go past. So it's kind of difficult.
Your restaurant is an expensive restaurant, which means you get, let's say, a higher end clientele in there. And those people often tend to be, sometimes self-important about themselves. Are they more finicky about what they want? I'm allergic to this. I'm allergic to that. I can't have this. I can't have that.
No, I don't think so. And by the way, not that expensive. Mary, we're not.
I brought them on. I'm talking to them.
Actually, for
it's
enough,
worth
actually,
every penny, though, Derry.
Well, I think we're more reasonable than people actually give us credit for, to be honest about it, I've got to say to you. You know, we do great deals during the week and so on, so look us up on our website. But, no, to answer your question, funny enough, during the week, we're more corporate on the working days, and people who are corporate come in to eat, it's business associated, because they're not really, to them, it's not really important. The meal is not the whole thing. But the other thing is, for me, is the people that are important is Mr. and Mrs. Smith, who booked 2 months ago for their special anniversary tonight. That's key to me, you know, because you have to look after them. Because that's a big night for them. It's a big memory to be made. So that's kind of a bit of pressure. You've got to make sure they're happy. They're the most important customers. You know, and that's what you get. Funny enough, being an occasional restaurant, I would call us, we get a lot of anniversaries, birthdays, you know. And we could do weddings, actually. We do a lot of small weddings.
Yeah.
Which is on the rise.
But that's the thing, isn't it, Derry? I mean, you get these special occasions because people, you know, want to come to your restaurant to celebrate a special occasion. And therefore, the atmosphere at some of these special occasions is heightened. There's increased nervous tension. There's jeopardy at odds here.
Yeah.
You might, you know, obviously, I'm sure over the years you've seen some funny sort of, incidents.
There's a lot. I mean, funny enough, you know, there's so many. You could say maybe or maybe not. There's a couple. I mean, it was one we had a lot of engagements in the wedding. Weddings, but engagements. And this guy rang up and came ahead with the ring. And we gave the ring. All the usual stuff in dessert.
Yeah.
It's a bit cliche, I suppose. Out it goes. But, I mean, you'd expect him to be organised, you know. So he got down on one knee, full restaurant, and she said no.
Yeah.
Straight up.
And was this within earshot of people?
Everyone knew.
Oh my God.
Like everyone knew. So she said no and walked out.
She walked out.
Left him there. You know, it was really, actually, everyone kind of felt this. The silence afterwards was like amazing. It was like everyone was like, whoa. Was this
and he's on his knee.
He was, yeah. One knee, yeah. Anyway, to make a long story short, I actually freebies the meal. I couldn't charge him. But you know something? I did ask him on the way out. I says, why didn't I, you know, normally we do go that far, especially in a public place, asking someone to marry you. You kind of get the idea, yes or no, you're going to get a yes, wouldn't you? So I was kind of surprised he didn't go that far, you know, work it out.
Wow. Yeah,
I know. That's the only time it happened, to be honest. So listen, anyone listening in, get engaged in our place. It's pretty okay.
Yeah, it's usually yes. It's usually, but not exclusively yes. And Camille, has he ever been into the restaurant since?
I don't think so.
Or she?
I don't think so.
The other fella?
Yeah. With their new husband.
And there was one about an actress, was there?
Yeah, well, the other one, we had an actress came in with her daughter and they had two salads, two still waters, and the salads, no dressing. They kind of picked at it for about an hour and left. And a few weeks later, I met with the hotel they were staying in, the chef there I knew, said to me, what should you do to them? And I said, what do you mean? He said, they came back to the hotel, went to their room, their suite, and they rang down and got room service. Burgers, fries, apple pie, cream, bottle of wine, the whole lot, yeah? I said, it's amazing, isn't it? So they wanted to be shown or seen eating light food.
Oh, is that what it is?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
The food isn't that bad now. Okay.
Maybe they were allergic to everything. They weren't allergic to burgers, though.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? So there you go.
Yeah. And this was a very famous actress, was it?
Middling.
In world terms or in Irish terms?
I'm not going to try and get it out of you.
Go on.
World terms.
Oh, world terms.
Yeah.
American?
Yes.
Blonde? you can tell me the hair colour.
Maybe I'm really blonde. I don't know. But,
right. You
know.
Very good. How long has Lecrivain been going now?
We opened July 1989.
Wow.
I know, yeah.
30 years.
I know, 30 years, yeah.
So you're probably planning something big for that, are you? Or maybe not?
Oh, we will, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know. To last that long, I suppose. Yeah. Funny enough, if someone said to myself and Sally Ann, you'd be open in 30 years' time, I wouldn't have opened. I would not have opened the restaurant. It's a long time doing the one thing, you know, it really is. But the great thing about it is the people that have worked there over the years, so many, and they kind of come and go, but they're all part of it. And great memories. You know, we made some great memories in the restaurant. Mm. I think it was more fun in the early days. Things are much easier going. Mm. It's pre-social media. I mean, social media is a hard thing now to put up with.
In terms of TripAdvisor and all this sort of stuff, and people who are scammers and not writing the correct thing and just having a go at you.
It is true.
Trolling.
Yeah. Trolling is a big thing, you know.
Yeah,
and,
it is.
And TripAdvisor is a big troll tool, I call it. But overall, it's been a great experience. You know? I don't see us going 30 more years, though. I don't see that happening.
Yeah. Is it easier? It just occurred to me today when I knew I was going to be talking to you. Is it easier financially to run your business? When maybe it's an obvious question, maybe it's a truism. When times are bad, then when times are good. Are things better for you when times are good, or is that?
You know something. You know when we had that recession or depression, whatever you want to call it, in the 8 or 9s, 2008, 2009, we had to change a lot of things. You know, we're doing. And funny enough, in a recession, you actually do better.
Is that right?
Because you're watching. You're watching your pennies. You're watching everything, and you're looking at everything. You know, the good times. Things are a bit more loose, I suppose. Yeah. That's a fair comment.
And but all your suppliers are charging more, and
everyone's
and you're sort of willing to pay it.
Yes, yeah, everyone's easier. You know, it's easier to get on. And definitely, I felt the recession quite difficult. Don't get me wrong, but everyone was in the same boat, you know, and that was the way I looked at it. And we got through it. Yeah. We got through it. Luckily, though, myself and Salian did have a lot of funds saved away from the restaurant, and we used that to keep it going.
To float,
float through. So we did that, which is a good thing. Obviously, you know, I suppose monetary-wise, we lost our future, you know, pension funds, that kind of thing. But that's something I think we weren't the only ones. And we were lucky, actually, that's all we lost.
Yeah.
Like, we kept the restaurant, we kept our house, you know what I'm saying? So I suppose we weren't got into the madness of spending and buying properties. I think we're lucky we didn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, some people did. I can see why they did. We thought we'd go on forever. But I mean, it was like a light switch, actually, If I remember rightly, it was January and it was like a light switch. Just one day was great, next day was gone.
Yeah. It's like in the entertainment industry as well. I mean, people often might think that, but during the recession, people want to get out and have a laugh.
They do.
Isn't it funny?
They do, yeah. They definitely do. I think things became more real, actually, and people became friendly again.
Yeah.
You go around the streets and, you know, people, because we all stuck together. That's one thing about Ireland, Irish people, I always find. We stick together. When our backs are to the wall, we kind of stick together and help each other out.
That's a nice thing to say.
I think so. I think we do, yeah. And I kind of felt that in the recession.
It's probably one of the upsides of our, if you like, parochial society.
It is,
that we know each other. And we know a fella who knows you and I'll take care of you.
Well, every person in Ireland, I think, is three or four removed, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely. Well, speaking of having a laugh, we asked you to pick three things for us today, Derry. We asked you to pick a comedy clip, a hero, and a speech clip. And you've chosen really interesting clips. Yeah. But the first one is just a sheer laugh. Tell us about the first one.
40 Towers, come on, you know. I mean, if you look at us a couple of weeks ago, it was voted number one in the world.
Father Ted was number two.
Number two, Father Ted, yeah. And both Father Ted also was brilliant, you know. Yeah. I think Father Ted is a bit more complex. I mean, 40 Towers, they only made 12 episodes, which is incredible, you know.
Yeah.
And that was based in a real hotel.
It was in Torquay.
Yeah, the Glen Eagles in Torquay,
right.
The owner, yeah.
And Basil was based on a real character,
right.
who the Monty Python team had stayed with.
That's right.
And they met this guy who was basically a sort of a xenophobe.
That's right.
Who wanted to harken back to the glory days of the Raj. And,
And the first the first year, I think it was 75, was the first series came out. And Basil Vaulty, the character, John Cleese, he got £6,000 for the whole lot.
Oh, interesting.
£6,000. And he has to do 42 weeks work for that.
Wow.
Yes. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And as a farce, it's been unsurpassed, really.
It has.
It was one of the greatest farces
I mean, look,
ever written.
It's so simple. It really is, isn't it? It's like, you don't miss much in it, you do, as you said.
Yeah, it's simple. And that's not to say, I think the strength comes from the power of his leading performance. To be honest, if you take him out of the equation, it's not the same show.
Yeah, true.
There are great cameos, but it's his central performance, his physicality, his sheer madness, his exasperated, I want to get back to the old days of the Raj madness, and his snobbery, that small petty bourgeoisie snobbery of Basil.
Yeah, I've never met anyone like him, but I'd love to meet someone like him actually and see what they're like in real life. But anyway.
Here's a clip of the great Fawlty Towers.
He's shoddy, he doesn't care, he's a liar, he's incompetent, he's lazy, he's nothing but a half-witted, thick Irish joke.
Oh, hello, Ryan, how funny, we were just talking about you, and then we got on to another Irish bill that we used to know. Oh, God, he was off!
I was talking about you, Mr. O'Reilly.
Well, you do? I thought you were talking...
Come, Mrs. Vaulty.
I'm coming.
Oh, dear me, what have I done now?
That and that.
Not to worry, I'm putting it right.
Not to worry.
You've heard of the genius of the lamp, Mrs. Fawlty. Well, that's me.
You think I'm joking, don't you?
Paul, don't smile.
Why are you smiling, Mr. O'Reilly?
Well, to be perfectly honest, Mrs. Fawlty, I like a woman with spirit.
Oh, do you? Is that what you like?
I do.
Oh, good.
Now, Sybil, that's enough.
Come on, then, give us a smile. I have seen more intelligent creatures than you lying on their backs at the bottom of ponds. I have seen better organised creatures than you running round farmyards with their heads cut off. Now collect your things and get out.
That's Prunella Scales, John Cleese, and the great Irish actor David Kelly.
David Kelly. He was brilliant in that. He really was. You know, what an actor, David Kelly.
What an actor, David Kelly. He probably was in Lecrivan.
Actually, I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think so, Ariel, but he was just something special. That was a special actually. I'm glad that clip, you picked that clip because it's an Irish connection for us, you know.
And he was amazing as well, of course, as Rashers Tierney in
Strumpet City.
In the late 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, just it reminds me there because I asked you that question. Give us a few. Can you do a few name checks on mega stars that have been in?
Well, we had them all pretty much in Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie,
Presumably they were together.
Well, not the same time. I think actually Brad was pre the time they met.
Yes.
And all the Irish actors, pretty much, you know, Colin Farrell, Pierce Brosnan comes a good regular. Yeah, it's a lot of people come in.
Clinton,
and, Clinton, no. Mm. Any big
politicians?
Not actually, no, not really. I think we're more of a rock star.
Yeah, Bono's been in a few times.
Yeah.
They like their gourmet.
They do. You know, it's good. Actually, they do. They like their food, which is very important. I think food is very important.
Yeah.
The thing about it, I've got to say, actually, most people who are celebrities and real celebrities that come in are actually easy to look after because they want to be down to earth.
Mm.
You know, they want to relax and enjoy their night. And funny enough, restaurants are a place where they can get that because they have their own space. You know, they can't go to a bar and stand at the bar or a nightclub.
Mm. Although Bono does. He's a great man at standing in a bar and being one of the punters.
Yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he?
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, he knows he can do it in Ireland and people will go. I mean, it's that old story of, I'm not even going to grace him by saying hello to him.
But I got to say, I'm definitely a pro Bono, you know, a pro U2, because, you know, I can remember when they started off, the Northside lads, and music then in Ireland was, you know, hard going, hard to make it. I mean, if you got anything.
So am I. I'm pro Bono as well. Yeah. And I mean, he's known in media circles and on trolling fans as the Pox.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah, that's what he's called, he's nicknamed. Terrible. But I find him a hugely interesting, complicated person, a person who is constantly seeking to strive, better himself, make the world better around him. Yeah. And he didn't have to do any of this stuff at all, get involved in any of this stuff, travelling the world, trying to meet people to talk about debt relief and improving people's. Yeah. But he does, and I don't think he does it out of a huge amount of egocentricity.
No.
I think he does have a massive ego, but you have to be to walk into those rooms and to look at people like presidents and prime ministers face to face.
Well, you know something, you know, yes, but ego is a good thing to have, actually. You know, people look upon ego as negative.
Irish people look upon ego as
probably
negative.
Yeah.
Ego is healthy.
Yes.
There are negative egos and positive egos.
100%.
To have ego, you must believe in, you know, ego believes in yourself.
Yes.
Enable people around you, be strong for people around you.
Yeah.
Lead,
yep.
Be inspirational.
Yep.
You need ego.
You do.
I mean, you can't just be a shrinking violet all the time.
Yeah, it's ego, confidence, they kind of match together, I think.
Yeah. I think it's when confidence spills over into hubris and arrogance.
Yes.
It's not so nice.
It's a fine line, but you know.
It's a fine line.
But it's not Bono.
We're
sure.
Both going well on that front, though, Derry.
Yeah, we are.
Listen, we're going to take a break, Derry. Stay with me after the break. I'm talking to Derry Clark about loads of other things. This is Mario's Sunday Roast. Welcome back to Mario's Sunday Roast. I'm here with Derry Clark from Lecrae Van. Derry, I'll tell you one other thing I'm interested in, what you did. Lords and Ladles.
Lords and Ladles was just a brilliant series to work on.
What's it about?
It was about going to the old stately homes in Ireland, you know, and getting the recipes and some of the recipes that were served in the houses, you know, centuries ago, and recreating them.
Yeah.
You know, honestly recreating them and making those dishes again happen again. And being a cook for me was just great, going in there and doing that, getting that opportunity to cook dishes from 200, 300, 400 years ago. Quite incredible.
400 years ago. So
actually, our oldest recipe came from, I think, 1280.
1280?
Yeah.
Give me an example of something that might have been eaten.
Well, funny enough, you know, the 1280s, believe it or not, the dishes then were obviously pre-potato, because people don't realise the spud in Ireland is fairly new.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the spud didn't come here till the 17th century into Ireland.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
No, you're looking surprised.
Well, this is the Walter Raleigh.
Yes, from Peru.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. So people are surprised and say, that, I mean, our national dish is only, it's relatively new in terms of history in Ireland. That dish, funny enough, from 1280 was like pretty fillet of beef, that kind of stuff. Yeah. Believe it or not, you know, over a fire, because they cooked over a fire a lot then. Obviously, they did. Some absolutely disgusting dishes. I mean, Paul Flynn and Catherine Fulvio will tell you more than I would. Paul was more squeamish than any of us.
Hmm.
But he's great. They're great to work with. Two great people to work with. Two great chefs.
When you say disgusting dishes, can you give me an example?
Well, one dish I actually thought was completely and utterly rank was fish's bladders. They're the ones that when fish use to float, to go up to the surface and come down again.
Yeah.
And they're kind of gelatinous. That's being polite.
Mm.
And we did a dish with that. Another one was the roof of a cow's mouth.
Yeah.
The roof of the mouth.
Kind of.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
Pretty disgusting. No.
I can't imagine it really, you know. Is it hard?
It was kind of chewy. It wasn't good. It just wasn't good, you know. And then the usual stuff, you have testicles and kidneys and hearts and brains.
I love the testicles myself.
Well, you know something?
I mean, who doesn't love testicles?
And we're talking about lamb. I mean, there's Easter Sunday.
Sorry.
No, Easter Sunday. We're talking about lamb. Lamb's testicles today. I'm sure there's no one out there cooking them for their lunch today.
I love it.
Or dinner. But I was my job actually one day. You see, you're laughing. They're quite tasty, actually, believe it or not. They're like, they're nice, actually.
Full of protein there, Derry.
Plenty of protein.
Plenty of protein. Is there anything that you, from doing that programme, Lords and Ladles, is there anything that you feel that has been lost from our diet in the 21st century and the 20th century that maybe would have been worth introducing or might be worth introducing, reintroducing?
Well, there's one, some ingredients obviously I came across that I hadn't before. One was mace, you know, a spice. Really nice, very tasty. It makes it brought a dish up. I don't know, I did. It was just, they use that a lot. And also, sugar was hardly ever used, you know. Salt, pepper wasn't used because they weren't there.
No.
But salt was pretty much, but not, you know, sea salt at a local level. They used a lot. Actually, funny enough, it was more protein. They're into proteins, very little fruits, obviously, because you have to import them, you know. So you look at the menus, they came from the area where that place was, and that's how they lived. I mean, the wealthy, very wealthy, could import the spices, you know, etc., or fruits. If you had fruit in your house, you were
loaded.
You were loaded, exactly. Loaded is the word. And It was interesting, really was, but it was all proteins. I mean, sometimes, some menus we did, it was just tons and tons of meat. I mean, tons. Like a whole lamb, a whole pig. It was just incredible. And, you know, and it was lovely. Actually, one place we did, the menu was served 100 years in that same house, 100 years before. The same menu, the same table. They had the same cutlery, same crockery in that house that we used again. It was quite incredible to do that.
Yeah, well, it is quite incredible. And when you're doing that, do you feel, I mean, do you really feel you're tasting and stepping back in time and you feel like this must have been what it's like?
It does. It was definitely. I mean, the houses haven't changed much, you know, and the people living in them are just brilliant. I mean, I've got to say, it was just great seeing them all. And, you know, we have this thing about stately homes in Ireland. We have this kind of thing, you know, Irish thing about them. I mean, English, pretty much. They weren't all English, by the way. But they were important to the community in their time. You know, they were important for employment, for the well-being of the villages that lived around them, commerce, etc. They were important. So the history's there. It's all over the place. It really is. And you go to these places and you see the history and get it. It's incredible.
Hmm. Yeah. Very good. Okay. Let's go to your second choice, Derry. And this is the speech. So you've chosen a really interesting speech.
Yeah, you were saying that. You know something, you know, speeches, obviously... Someone says speech. What's the first one everyone says? Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
That's the one everyone says.
Absolutely. And but also now the guests on the show have gone to chosen speeches from movies.
Have
so,
they really?
Yeah, so you lost out on that one. So they've migrated to speeches on movies. But you've actually chosen a political speech.
I have, a real speech, yeah. And it was, I think, actually a US president that wasn't rated initially. People looked upon him as no chance. But yeah, I think he surprised everyone. And in history, he'll go down really well, I think. And he said the Berlin Wall... 1987, tear down this wall. Who was that?
It was Ronald Reagan.
It was Ronald Reagan.
Saying, tear down this wall, Mr. Gorbachev. And of course, Reagan was derided and he was regarded as a joke at the beginning. And then he was shot in 1981 by a fellow called John Hinckley.
Yes.
And his recovery in hospital kind of dovetailed with America's slow recovery as a nation economically, yes, which led to the whole greed is good situation and the whole... you know, the growth of the markets and everything. And subsequently, his legacy has grown and grown and grown, where he's now regarded as one of the greatest presidents.
I know, it's amazing.
Certainly in conservative terms.
Yeah. I mean, he was an actor. That's how he was, you know. And he was just, actually, funny enough, if you look at what you want, which I think we all need nowadays, is states people, you know, states men and women that run countries that you can look up to or admire. We kind of lost that a bit, I think. And he was one. I mean, he was definitely a statesman.
He ran an amazing ad campaign in I think it was either 84 or 80 when he ran, and it was called It's Morning in America, and it was the idea of we're getting up out of bed and we're going to go to work and we're going to make this country great, make America great again.
Yeah,
and that's where Trump stole it from.
He did.
Trump stole
did.
Make America Great Again from Ronald Reagan.
Well, you couldn't have two opposites, Trump and Reagan. You
yeah,
have two.
Reagan. I think what people loved about Reagan was they knew that there was an innate sense of decency in the man. So whatever about his politics, they knew this is a decent man.
Behind me stands a wall that encircles the free sectors of this city, part of a vast system of barriers that divides the entire continent of Europe. From the Baltic south, those barriers cut across Germany in a gash of barbed wire, concrete, dog runs, and guard towers. Farther south, there may be no visible, no obvious wall, but there remain armed guards and checkpoints all the same. Still a restriction on the right to travel. Still an instrument to impose upon ordinary men and women the will of a totalitarian state. President von Weizsäcker has said the German question is open as long as the Brandenburg Gate is closed. But today I say, as long as this gate is closed, as long as this scar of a wall is permitted to stand, it is not the German question alone that remains open, but the question of freedom for all mankind.
And of course, he was a good speaker, being an actor. He was
correct.
He was a decent speaker.
Yes, he was indeed. You know, he was his delivery and timing was always perfect.
Exactly, his delivery was nicely timed.
Although towards his later term, he started forgetting things. Remember that
he did,
and he took the prompters,
and they took the piss out of it big time on Spitting Image as well. They had him in his bed, and he's just rolling over in the bed, and they have two buttons on the outside of the bed, and one says nuke, and the other says nurse.
That's right,
and he doesn't know which one to press.
And actually, he shared a bed with Maggie Thatcher. I remember rightly.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And she said, yes, oh, Mr. Reagan, we both have the same thing in common. We both screwed the country. I wouldn't mind screwing you. It'd been 24 years previous to that. Kennedy had stood under the Brandenburg Gate and had famously said, ich bin ein Berliner, which means I am a cake.
Really?
Yeah, I think the correct expression would have been Ich bin Berliner. But he said Ich bin ein Berliner.
Oh, I see.
Which ein Berliner is a muffin or a donut.
Yeah. But look at the change. Look at the change in Germany since that happened. You know, it's totally different. Actually, Europe's totally different. I mean, if a Berlin Wall was still there, where would it be now? What difference would be there? You know, it's strange to think about it.
Yeah.
That's our generation, really. So that was a very proud moment, I think, especially that wall coming down. Do you remember that? The kids.
Of course.
The students and the wall, brick by brick, it came down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely iconic. Tell me about, you're doing a walk for Pieta House.
Yes, indeed. Pieta House every year do a Darkness Into Light walk. It's annual.
The Darkness Into Light. So
yes.
You start in the early morning.
Correct. 4 o'clock, 4 a.m. on the 11th of May. And our 4:15, I think it is.
It's a lovely idea.
It is a lovely idea, because actually I do. I'm lucky. I'm honoured to be associated with Cortan in Wexford. Do the walk, and I do that. It's a 5K walk. It's very simple. It doesn't take too long, and you walk with other people. There's 2,000 people actually last year did Cortan walk, which is amazing for a small village. You know, the surrounding area, Gorey and so on. But it raises vital funds for Pieta House. You know, it's really important, because I mean all the services they produce and deliver are free of charge. Mm. There's no cost. You know. And they do a 24/7 helpline, which is like amazing, really, to do that. That's a big cost in that. So definitely look.
And who does Pieta House benefit?
Helps people with mental health issues, suicide especially. Helps families that are have suffered a loss, someone they loved, to suicide. So they're kind of an all round charity, and very important. They're pretty much all over the country. Everywhere they have offices, consultants. They have, you know, it's a very vibrant, active charity.
And did you get involved in Pieta after your son Andrew?
Yes.
Yeah. How are you?
I'm great. You know,
does that process work itself out?
Well, I mean, you know, today's difficult. Easter Sunday. You know, Sunday. See, Easter Sunday for anyone listening in is a family day. You know, it's like Christmas Day, really. I think Easter Sunday's become the second Christmas, if that makes sense. So obviously he's not there, he won't be there, but you have to, you know, get on and move on and stay as strong as you can, you know. But things never really change, same again, you know. You lose a loved one to suicide. I think it's the hardest loss you can have, because there's no answers. You can't go back. It's time is time, and that's it. It doesn't get easier. I mean, it's 5 years now with Andrew, and it seems like yesterday, which is quite incredible, really, isn't it? But, you know, today I've spent it with Sally Ann, Sarah May, my mother-in-law, Sadie, and we'll remember him for sure. And we always talk about him, you know, as if he's there, which I think is a good thing. But I would ask anyone, you know, on the 11th of May to get out there and walk, you know, and support. It's a great cause, you know. And you can look up darknessandlight.ie online, and you can pay on the day, on the morning, €20. €5 for kids, and it's great. But for me, as you know, things like that, doing the walk or getting involved in Pieta House, because I'm one of the ambassadors, there are many great ambassadors, for me it does help a bit to heal. You know, when I lost Andrew, I never cycled or did anything fitness wise. I got a bike and started cycling, and the change for mental health, you know, walking, cycling, it just helps you. It really does. It really does. So, and anyone out there, you know, who is suffering, you know, you're not alone. There's always someone there to talk to, always, you know. And that's what I would say.
That's a good message. And that's the 11th of May, Darkness Into Light.
Yes.
Starting at 4 a.m. Derry Clark, listen, enjoy your barbecue today. Happy Easter Sunday.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your lovely choices, and continued success.
Pleasure, Mario. Thanks for having me.